Welcome to Classic Comedy of Old Time Radio. I'm your host, Ron Eckelbarker. Here we go with the Bob Hope Show. Now, I just want to let you all know that we're skipping over a couple of the shows that should be next because they are Christmas shows from the end of 1948. So we're, you know, in November now, I thought it would be nice to just hold off on those for a few weeks and air them in a little over a month when it is around Christmas time. And then it will be, a little bit like maybe we were listening to them live. At least the things would apply. So we'll air those shows next month. Right now, we are going to listen to episode number 405, and it originally aired on February 8th, 1949. Here now is Bob Hope, with no special guest this week, just his great cast of regulars.
Yes, it's the News Swan Show, brought to you by Lever Brothers Company, with our great singing star, Doris Day. A new singing favorite, Bill Ferrell. Ryan, Jack Kirkwood, the Four Hits and a Miss, the new Les Brown Band, and yours truly, Hi Averback.
We use one exclusively, how about you?
You.
For me, this is Bob back in Hollywood Hope telling you gals to always scrub with Swan in the tub, and you won't have to win your husband at the Pyramid Club.
And now, Bob Hope's Swan's Eye View of the News. Washington, D.C. this week was officially declared Boy Scout Week as the nation once more paid annual tribute to that fine organization, the Boy Scouts of America.
Yes, sir, and that's a great group of kids, and I'm proud to say that I used to be a Boy Scout, and I was a good one, too. When they gave me the test for pitching camp, it only took me 10 seconds to fasten the flap on my tent. Of course, I'd had 10 years basic training with long underwear. I get my first good deed. I helped an old lady across the street, and that was when I first met Crosby. I'll never forget my old scoutmaster either. He taught us how to be careful when using a knife and axe. Yes, sir, I'll never forget him. Good old Stumpy Jones. Those were the days. Our scoutmaster used to take us out in the woods and tell us about the birds and the bees, then spend the next 12 hours trying to get us down out of the trees.
The nation at large, Dan Cupid was busy polishing his bow and arrows this week as America prepared for its time-honored celebration of Valentine's Day.
This morning I received my usual Valentine from the Internal Revenue Department, a tax form done in red with a note at the bottom, eat your heart out. I got a very sentimental Valentine from Jack Benny. Roses are red, violets are blue. This card comes to you. Postage due. Valentine's Day always makes me think of my first girlfriend, Lucy. She was 9 and I was 10. Now, one night we kissed and the braces and our teeth locked. After that, we went every place together. The electric company sent me a Valentine, though. It said, our love for you from the rooftops we'll shout. You better read this fast. In a few minutes, your lights go out.
Portland, Oregon. This week, a state senator proposed a bill that would prohibit the sale of popcorn in movie houses on the grounds that popcorn interferes with the showing of the picture.
I hear one of the main reasons movie managers want to ban popcorn is because it smells up their theaters. I wonder what excuse I'll use now. They're going to outlaw popcorn. Outlaw and pop law. I took my girl to see The Pale Face, and during my big dramatic scene, I noticed tears in her eyes. I said, don't cry. Everything turns out all right. She added, who's crying? I got salt in my hangnail. That's what she said. I'm glad I didn't. Those popcorn machines really slow up cheating, too. Last week, the Paramount, a man was putting a nickel in the popcorn machine when an usher rushed up and said, hurry, Bob Hope's going on. And the fellow answered, please, not while I'm eating. Hollywood.
California. As its United Airlines DC-6 landed in Burbank, the Bob Hope Troop completed a five-week tour of the country.
Yes, sir, and as our plane approached the airport, we flew over a typical California scene. There, basking in the sun, were thousands of people, in short. It was good to see Santa meet again. And it surprised me, while I was gone, Paramount put air conditioning in my dressing room. It's not really air conditioning. They just drilled a hole in the lid. Paramount has a special way of welcoming you home. For the big stars, they have a choir singing, "You're the Top." For the medium stars, a double quartet does "Hooray for Hollywood." When I arrived, a street cleaner banged two garbage cans together, threw up a handful of confetti and said, "Say it isn't so."
California. Don't miss the Swan Show next week when Bob Hope presents Look Magazine's Annual Achievement Award. Olivia de Havilland, Walter Wanger, Anatole Buck, Gene Herschel, Fred Astaire, and many other of Hollywood's great will be here in person. Don't forget, next week's Bob Hope Show and next week's issue of Look Magazine. The cover features those famous cover girls, Olivia de Havilland and Poutsnout in person. And now, Bob, could you get Les Brown to give me an impressive fanfare for this next item?
All right, go ahead, Les. That's sweet. Sound like the mating call of a mashed potato. Come on, Les, play one as if your dues were paid up, will you please?
Would you like to win the vacation of a lifetime? Hurry, hurry, you may be a winner. Get a pencil and paper tonight and enter Lever's sensational $50,000 travel contest. Win a round-the-world tour for two, all travel expenses paid, plus pocket money and clothes allowance, or you can have $10,000 in cash.
There are 15 second prizes, an all-expense trip to Europe for each winner, or $2,500 in cash. All trips arranged by Thomas Cook & Son. In addition, there are $4,000 in cash prizes.
It's easy to enter, so get started tonight. Here's all you do. Finish this statement in 25 words or less. I like large-size Swan soap because... Send each entry with your wrapper from a cake of large-size Swan to Lever, Tour the World Contest, Box 1, New York 8, New York.
That's Box 1, New York 8, New York. Only residents of the continental United States, Alaska, and Hawaii are eligible.
Follow the complete rules on the entry blank you get at your store. Enter now. You, yes, you, can win an all-expense trip for two people around the world.
Here's a gal that's made many a new friend around the country in the past 5 weeks. Here with Les Brown and his band of renown, Miss Doris Day.
Someone like you cures everything gloomy, turns wrong into right, brightens the night, brings happiness to me. Makes me luckier than throwing a seven, takes me nearer to heaven than anyone's allowed to do. When your heart is talking, I feel like I'm walking on a cloud. But someone like you, someday I'll find someone I can boast to, somebody to hug, a bug in a rug to snuggle up close to. And whenever I do, do you know the who I'll give the most to? You pray on my mind, stay till I find someone like you. Someday I'll find someone I can boast to, somebody to hug, a bug in a rug to snuggle up close to. And whenever I do, do you know the who I'll give the most to? You pray on my mind, stay till I find someone like you for me, until I find someone like you.
Thank you, Doris. I also want to thank the Seneca Tribe for that peace pipe. I appreciate it.
Folks, Bob Hope landed back in Hollywood early this morning, tired but happy. Now let's look into the taxi cab that's taking Doris Day and Bob home.
cab can't get me home too quick, Bob. I'm tired.
Yeah, now, let's see, Doris. I paid for the cab in St. Louis. You paid for the cab in Amarillo, and I paid in Oakland.
Yeah, I know, Bob. It's my turn to pay.
How'd you know?
You've got your hand in my purse.
I was just looking for my eyelash curler. Somebody stole it.
Bob, you know, I'm worried about you. You look terribly tired.
Well, who's tired?
Well, you are. Jack, so fidgety and nervous, I wouldn't be surprised if you blew your cork.
Blow my cork? Doris, it's just that I'm so happy to be back in California, sunny California, where it never cold, the weather's always warm, and it never sleets or rains. What was that?
Your cork. Glad to be back home, Bob. I'm so happy to see California. I could get out of this cab right now and kiss the ground.
Don't do that, Doris. Last time I got home, I kissed the ground. The gopher came out and kissed me back. Anyway, I'm here with you. Wouldn't you rather kiss me?
I don't know. I've never kissed a gopher.
By the way, Doris, where's Miss Ryan?
Oh, she's sitting up front with the driver. She got in while you were putting the baggage in the back.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Yeah, look at her up there. I bet she's starting a flirtation. Let's slide back the window and listen, huh?
And after my third operation, the doctor said there wasn't anything more to take out, so we had to throw a few things back in.
Look, lady, I'm tired of hearing about your ailments. I'm trying to listen to the car motor. You hear that? One of the gaskets is slapping.
That's what the doctor said was wrong with my liver.
Madam, I'm a very nervous man.
Miss Ryan, the driver's got enough trouble.
Well, Mr. Hope, I was just telling him about my pain. You know, that clinic in Denver gave me a wonderful remedy for my shooting pain.
Really?
Yes. They told me to drink 2 glasses of brandy after every meal.
Well, brandy is pretty intoxicating. Did it stop your shooting pain?
No, but it sure ruined their aim.
You'd be in a more cheerful mood now that we're home.
Oh, I will be as soon as I have another examination.
What's wrong now?
Well, you see, I had an operation during the war, and there was a shortage of surgical threads, so they sewed me up with telephone wire.
Telephone wire?
Yes. I didn't notice anything peculiar at first, but the last time the doctor put a stethoscope on me, he kept hearing busy signals and getting the correct time.
Well, don't worry till your appendix gets a call from Stop the Music.
Oh, here's my house, Bob. Miss Ryan and I will get out right here.
See you later, Doris. Goodbye, Miss Ryan. I know you'll feel great now that you're back in California.
Yes, it's a wonderful state. Uh-huh. My Uncle Julius loved California till the day he died. In fact, in his will, he said he didn't want to leave California even after he was gone.
He didn't want to leave after he was gone?
No. So we didn't bury him.
You didn't?
No. We just put him on a bar stool in Glendale, and everybody thinks he's watching television. Bye now.
Well, here's my house. I left it in charge of a rental agency. I wonder if anybody rented it for the few weeks I was gone. Boy, look at all those empty liquor bottles on the front porch. Slow gin, fast gin. And just stay where you are and I'll catch up with you. I'll find out about this.
Come on, now open that door.
What do you want, boy?
Listen, what do I want? Do you know who owns this house?
No, I'm just renting. But well, whoever owns this joint must have a name that begins with H. It's embroidered on everything around the place.
H, huh? Who do you suppose it is?
I don't know, but from the looks of the clothes in the closet, it must be Hildegard.
Yeah, I know the guy, and he's built like that. I don't want to seem curious, but why did you rent this house?
Well, it's a nice neighborhood for my business. You see, I'm the head of a corporation that merges small investments, engrossing the attendant interest thereon with all stockholders, sharing in a co-partnership which varies with the current monetary exchange.
What does that mean?
I'm a bookie.
take people's hard-earned wages, wages that should go for food and clothing, and leave them penniless and hungry, you ought to be ashamed of yourself.
I am, boy. Sometimes I get to crying so hard I can't see to count the money.
Well, you must be cleaning up here.
Oh, not so much. Sometimes you just can't win. Take last month, I had a sure thing. There were only two horses in the race. My horse had two electric batteries under the saddle. They fed the horse a bucket of Benzedrine. My wife was the jockey, and she rode with an ice pick for a whip. But the other horse won.
How'd that happen?
One of the judges was crooked. Look, would you like to risk $10 on a horse, boy?
No.
$5?
No.
How about some poker for a dollar?
No.
Want to bet 10 cents, stand across the room and spit in the pop bottle?
No, I don't want to take advantage of you. I can spit straighter than anybody. I used to put out fires in glove compartments at a car wash.
Sure you don't want to play any poker?
Well,
come on. Put some money in the pot, boy.
Why are you so dollar hungry?
I can't help it. You won't believe it. My family was awful poor. We were miserable. Our cupboards were as bare as a fan dancer in a tornado. We didn't have nothing to eat at all.
Honest?
We couldn't even afford real bait for the mousetrap. One night we took a magazine, went through it, and we found the food advertisements. Then we baited the trap with a picture of a piece of cheese.
Well, what did you catch?
A picture of a mouse. look, boy, I want to help you out. Now, how would you like to be rich? I'm going to get you more money than you thought there was in the whole world.
Well, how can you? Joseph's got a butler that barks like a dog. That's the kind of lines I get. He gets a picture of a mouse, I get a... Lighters, whipping room.
Oh, look, I'm going to give you a horse in the next race that can't lose.
What's the name of the horse?
Grandma's Tweezer. Believe me, put your last cent on it.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Here's my last 50 now. You sure can win?
Oh, you'll be rich. The race is starting right now. I'll turn it on.
Coming out of the starting gate right now. No, it isn't. I was mistaken. The winner is the favorite of millions. Swan Soap.
Did he say the winner was Swan Soap?
Yes.
Good. I had $50 on that horse.
Wait a second. You told me to bet on Grandma's Tweezers. You said it couldn't lose. If it was such a sure thing, how does it happen? How does it happen you had your money on another horse?
Oh, I don't know. Just lucky, I guess.
Here's our boy Baritone that's been booming him from coast to coast this past month. With Hoagy Carmichael's inspirational masterpiece. Come in, Billy Farrell.
Sometimes I wonder why I spend the lonely night dreaming of a song, the melody haunts my reverie, and I am once again with you. An inspiration. But that was long ago, and now my consolation is in the stardust of a song. memory of love's
international news this week has been the possible meeting of Joseph Stalin and President Truman here in America. If Joseph Stalin were to come to America, what would his reactions be? What sort of story would he tell of his trip and the meeting?
My name is Marshal Joseph Stalin. 2 weeks ago, I set sail for America in my own private ship, the SS Borscht. After we left Moscow, it was very rough sailing the first 2,000 miles. Then we reached water. Finally, after a week at sea, our boat pulled into the New York Harbor. I looked across the railing and said, "Hello, America. Hello, Statue of Liberty. Hello, Mort." I'll never forget that exciting moment when I arrived in America and stepped off the boat. Next time, I'll wait till they lower the gangplank. On the dock in New York, we were met by a crowd of newspapermen.
Marshal Stalin, I'm from the press. What do you intend to discuss with President Truman?
I will discuss the lifting of the Berlin blockade. I will also be willing to cut down on armaments. There is one thing, however, that I will not do.
What's that?
I will not move to another network. I don't think.
Marshal Stalin, do you believe there will be war between your country and ours?
I can't answer that unless I discuss it with someone who knows more about it than I do.
You mean Molotov?
No, Drew Pearson.
Marshal Stalin, my name is Beverly Beasley, and I represent the woman's fashion magazine, Girdle.
How do you do?
My magazine would like to know what you think of the way women dress in Russia.
I don't know.
Why?
They keep their shades down.
Marshal Stalin, is it true that Russia has the lowest divorce rate of any country in the world?
No, our divorce rate is low because I recently issued a new order to the State Department. I said, "Dazhyavanda dani dvajich, yachibla lublu."
What does that mean?
Keep out of show out of Russia. After the interview, my wife and I left for the hotel in a taxicab. We drove up Wall Street.
Chewy.
Then by the First National Bank.
And then pass rock.
And then pass Rockefeller Center. Then we stopped while the cab driver put the windshield wipers on the inside. A few minutes later, my wife and I arrived at our hotel and we're alone in our room.
Joseph.
What is it, Mamichka?
We're alone in this nice hotel suite. Could I have a little kiss?
Sure, darling.
Oh, Joseph. They were five stickles.
Well, why don't you shave yours off? This is some room, huh, Bubovichka?
Look, Joe, on the bed. Good sheets.
Don't open any doors. There must be two Arabs up here taking a bath.
No, Papa. Over here, they use sheets to sleep on.
Some country. Can't afford straw, huh?
Joe, when are you going to see Harry?
Tomorrow, Mamichka.
But I haven't got a thing to wear to the meeting.
Don't be silly. When we left Moscow, didn't I buy you a beautiful peasant blouse?
Yes, but it's no good.
Why not?
The peasant is still in it.
Sorry, we have no time to buy clothes for you.
Well, I suppose I could wear the dress I have on. Everybody tells me I look like Rita Hayworth in it.
Rita Hayworth, you look more like Ali Khan. The next morning was the day of my meeting with the president. I wanted to impress Mr. Truman, so I put on my 250 medals and decorations. When I walked outside the hotel, I was cold. I should have put on clothes along with the medals. finally got to the White House. The butler showed me to my room. It was beautifully furnished and equipped with every modern convenience. Television set, electric blanket, built-in refrigerator, and a Hoover vacuum cleaner. With J. Edgar Hoover inside there. When I got unpacked, it was almost time for the meeting.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We are speaking to you from the Gold Room of the White House, Washington, D.C. We are here to give you an eyewitness account of one of the most historic meetings of all time. As you know, wait. President Harry S. Truman has just entered the room today. Mr. Truman takes a seat. And now another door in the room opens, and Marshal Joseph Stalin enters and is walking over to stand alongside President Truman. Now the two men face each other, and at last the historic moment has come. Is Mr. Truman ready?
Yes.
Is Marshal Stalin ready?
Ready.
Way down in the door. Oh, thanks. Ladies and gentlemen, about 2 o'clock this morning, a big United Airlines DC-6 kissed the concrete at Burbank. And our thrilling 15,000-mile United States safari was back at home base. We played some 40 cities and shook hands with thousands of fine people. And in the wee hours this morning, we shook hands and said so long to 8 of the finest, the crew of that DC-6. Captain Ed Kesig, Sam Miller, co-pilot Claire Jarvis, the navigator, the hostesses, B. Cowley and Winnie Porter, and Roy Powers, Jim Weir, and Ed York. Fine bunch of engineers. Believe me, the DC-6 and a crew like that is a combination that's hard to beat. They made the trip as smooth and pleasant as 15,000 miles to the Waldorf. Played a different city every day for 5 weeks, and the Big Six only missed one day, Providence, Rhode Island. Seems Providence was having a little Southern California weather that night. But we're warning you, Providence, we'll be back and soon. And the sooner we can visit every city and town in America, the better. Because to us, there's nothing more exhilarating than meeting all the different kinds of people who make up this one kind of country. Country where the kind of thing that happened to Cardinal Munzenti would have to happen over Uncle Sam's dead body. Thank you.
In the show today, Bob did a sketch about Joseph Stalin visiting America. Now, Stalin never did, but some of you might not be up on your history, so let me remind you who Joseph Stalin was. Stalin was born in 1878, and he lived until 1953. He was the dictator of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, or the USSR, or the Soviet Union, as it's been called, from 1929 until his death in 1953. After Vladimir Lenin, who was the first dictator of the USSR, died in 1924, there was about 5 years of strife, and Stalin maneuvered his way mostly through murder and terror and Stalin, wow, a bad guy, truly a bad guy. But he maneuvered his way to become the dictator, and his power was solidified by 1929. Then, in 1939, he made an alliance with Hitler that would allow Hitler to invade Poland and allow the Soviets to take over the Baltic states and Romania and a little bit of eastern Poland. So everybody would get what they wanted. Well, at least Stalin would get what he wanted, and Hitler could expand his power and take over Poland, which is what he wanted. Well, when Hitler did invade Poland then in 1939, it began World War II because France and England had an alliance with Poland, and they had to honor that. So they had to declare war on Germany. Now, it was never Hitler's intention to honor the alliance that he made with Stalin. And Hitler ended up invading Russia not even 2 years later in June of 1941. So Hitler's main goal was simply to get Stalin off guard, get the focus away from what he considered his Eastern Front of Russia, so that he could focus on France, which Hitler did end up, you know, taking all of France. So he pretty much had all of continental Europe by June of 1941 when he turned his attention to Russia. Well, that, of course, caused Stalin, who was taken by surprise, to switch sides and ally with Great Britain and free France. And then the U.S. Allied with Great Britain and the USSR to become what we call the Allies when the U.S. entered the war in December of 1941 after the attack on Pearl Harbor. Well, after the war, Stalin took as much of Eastern Europe as he could get his hands on, and he set up puppet communist regimes all throughout Eastern Europe, Romania, Yugoslavia, East Germany, and the list goes on and on, Poland. Now, you may have heard Bob Hope mention the Berlin Airlift. If you haven't, you will if you keep listening to the shows. Now, here's what happened, and Stalin was integrally involved in this. After World War II, the city of Berlin was divided into four sections: the U.S. section, the USSR section, the Great Britain section, and the France section. So each of the Allies controlled a section of Berlin because that was the capital city of Germany. And each of the Allies controlled a section of the rest of Germany. Well, the Soviet zone of East Germany, which became the country of East Germany, and was one of those puppet countries under Soviet rule, Berlin was 100 miles inside of that Soviet zone. Now, they really didn't like the fact that the U.S., France, and Great Britain had control over part of a city that was wholly within territory that was their control. Stalin wanted all of the city. So he, in June of 1948, closed all the highways, railroads, and canals from Western-occupied Germany into Western-occupied Berlin. So he cut off everything, and he believed that, hey, it's going to be impossible now for the people who live there to get food or any other supplies. And eventually, Britain, France, and the U.S. would just leave Berlin and let all of Berlin go to Soviet control. Well, the Allies were not going to do this, and we responded with the Berlin Airlift. And for more than a whole year, the Allies flew fuel, food, and other necessities into West Berlin. Over the course of that year, more than 2.3 million tons. I mean, think about that. At one point, it got up to 8,000 tons a day were flown into West Berlin from Allied-controlled West Germany and other places, France and Great Britain in Europe. But more than 2.3 million tons of cargo in one year was flown into West Berlin. Now, during this year, life there in West Berlin was not easy. Fuel and electricity were rationed. Most goods could only be gotten on the black market at hugely inflated prices. But still, there was a saying that kind of epitomized how West Berliners felt. You know, they said, hey, it's cold in Berlin, but it's colder in Siberia. Meaning, if Stalin took over West Berlin, they could probably end up in Siberia. And that's one of the things about Stalin. He not only killed and terrorized people of other nations, but he ruled the USSR, Russia, the Soviet Union by violence and terror. Anybody who got in his way, anybody that he even thought was going to be a problem to him, he had them assassinated or sent to concentration camps, gulags in Siberia. And that's why, you know, that the thing was, you cross Stalin, hey, you're going to end up in Siberia or dead, which dead was probably preferable for most people than getting shipped off to a gulag in Siberia. Estimates on how many deaths Stalin was responsible for, this is probably a low number, but the estimates are more than 20 million of his own people he killed during his rule. Really, really a nasty guy. Ranks right up there with Hitler, and we need to remember him as such. One thing, though, that makes this bit that Bob Hope did funny and very meaningful, the bit that he did about Stalin, is to realize that, as we pointed out, if Stalin didn't like what you did, you were sent to Siberia. Anybody in any Soviet-controlled countries that did these kind of things, like making fun of Stalin, like Bob Hope did, they would have been executed or sent to Siberia. There was absolutely no free speech in those communist countries. Most communist countries today, there is not free speech. For instance, North Korea. But anyway, so when you think about the freedom that exists in the Western countries, in Great Britain, in the United States, to lampoon not only foreign leaders, but our own leaders, it is really, free speech is a wonderful thing to have. And not every country has it. So keeping Bob Hope's bit that he did in historical context, I think makes it more meaningful and more funny. So anyway, thanks for letting me wax on about history. That's my thing. I'm a historian. That's why I like old-time radio. But there's some context to think about when listening to Bob Hope. And really, this is the kind of stuff that's been going on throughout most of these old-time radio programs that we've been listening to. Please send your questions and comments to host@classiccomedyotr.com. Come back next Wednesday for another episode of The Bob Hope Show, and check in on Friday for the next installment of The Life of Riley. Please go to our website, classiccomedyotr.com, and support our show by clicking on the Become a Patron button or the Donate button. Until we meet again, in the words of Mark Twain, by trying, we can easily learn to endure adversity. Another man's, I mean.